Welcome back. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. The 2012 Republican National Convention is underway in Tampa, Florida this week. Yesterday, Republicans officially nominated Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan as their candidates for president and vice presidents. Republicans from all corners of the country have gathered to hear speeches from high-profile party leaders, including Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, Rand Paul, Mike Huckabee, Condoleezza Rice, Ted Cruz, Scott Walker, and last night, Chris Christie and Ann Romney. They have also adopted the 2012 Republican Party platform. While many voters may not know what's in the party platform or even care, there are a few issues that have caused controversy this election cycle. Abortion, health care, immigration, and taxes, to name a few. The platform says it opposes abortion in all cases with no exceptions for rape or incest and supports a voucher system for health care for seniors rather than the current coverage. So what's in the party platform and how important is it as a roadmap? How has the Republican Party and what's in the platform evolved over the past few decades? And who is setting the agenda today? Joining us to talk about all this, we have Rick Holbrook. He is the principal for Holbrook Global Strategies. That's an investment firm in Palo Alto. And Rick is also a Bay Area delegate to the 2012 Republican National Convention. And he joins us from Tampa. Hi, Rick.
Hello there. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Also joining us from the convention in Tampa is Corey Cook. He's an associate professor in the political science department at the University of San Francisco. Hi, Corey.
Hi. Good to be with you.
Good to have you. And we're also joined by Jeffrey Cabaservis. He's the author of Rule and Ruin, The Downfall of Moderation and the Destruction of the Republican Party from Eisenhower to the Tea Party. It's a history of the Republican Party. Before we delve into what's in the platform and talk about the evolution of the Republican Party, Rick, can you just give us a sense of what the convention is like from the perspective of a delegate? Has there been a highlight, for example, for you so far?
Well, yesterday was our first day since Monday was not able to be held because of the Isaac storm coming through. But I'll tell you, there was a lot of enthusiasm there. Everybody was there. Some really good talks yesterday, and I think people are really excited and hyped up about what's going on here.
And I heard that you met Mitt Romney when you were at Stanford. He interviewed you for a job at Bain, and you said that you were so impressed with him that you continued to follow his career since then. What was it that so impressed you?
Well, it was funny. It was just a little half-hour interview. He had come to campus to interview summer interns. Of course, I did not know Mitt Romney at that time. I did know of his father, George Romney, who was quite famous, having been the president of American Motors and then governor of Michigan and so forth. In a half-hour interview, Mitt just struck me as somebody who was really smart, really sharp, very personable, really knew what he was talking about. And I can't really tell you any other interviewers that I ever met at Stanford, but I just remembered Mitt because he was came across so well. And then, of course, because I knew his father, George, that helped keep him in my mind. But ever since then, I just kind of kept an eye on Mitt. And then, of course, when he went to the Salt Lake Olympics, that's when I really started following him again.
And one more thing, we get these reports from the media, and I think the GOP would also like to portray a unified sense, but that the party is actually fractured on a lot of these issues that we're going to talk about. Is that something that you noticed there? Are there arguments about policy or about the Romney nomination, or is it pretty unified at this point?
I would say that it's very unified behind Romney. I think the key issues that people are really worried about are the economy and the government deficits. And those certainly are the two issues that I worry about. That's what most of the speakers talked about last night. And I think those are the ones that we're uniting behind.
Great. And Corey, since you're also at the convention, is there anything that might surprise people like me who only see what makes it to TV or hear it on the radio? Is there anything that you notice on the ground that we might just never imagine to give us a sense of what it's like to be there?
Well, it's hard to tell how much comes across and how scripted these are, but these are scripted down to the moment, and that's not just this convention. I had the opportunity to go to both conventions 4 years ago. The degree to which, I mean, so much is planned out. The teleprompters keep doing countdowns to the second for the speakers. Both parties obviously try to portray them as authentic on television, but these are, in fact, highly scripted events. I think I don't know how much of that really comes across.
That's what it comes across as. I was just wondering if it was something different, that if on the ground, that it felt different.
Yeah, again, I think as the delegate said, I think there's a ton of energy here. I think that's certainly the case. To see the delegates this year in comparison to 4 years ago, there's a lot more enthusiasm, a lot more energy. But at the same time, I guess I disagree about seeing the party as that unified. They're not open fights. There's not. I think, the idea that the delegates are screaming at each other is certainly not the case. But, if you just talk to individual delegates, a lot of them are completely in disagreement about big chunks of the platform. And so there is, there's considerable disagreement here.
What parts of the platform are there disagreements about?
Well, I think, some of those you mentioned on the lead-in. I think certainly on social policy, there's a lot of disagreement. The platform includes very, very explicit language on gun control, about not even regulating the size of clips or magazines. There's a piece of the time about the public display of the Ten Commandments. Certainly, as you mentioned, promotion of abstinence education, no limits on abortion, or full limits on abortion.
Go ahead, yeah.
So I think those are some of the issues that are most divisive. And then there's some in there that I think, frankly, are areas where you see that some of the Ron Paul delegates or some of the quote-unquote Tea Party delegates were able to get in. And so you see these little bits and pieces of the platform that, don't read as really that cohesive a document, because you can see the different interests that have sort of put their words in.
Well, maybe everybody could tell me this. Well, what's the point of a platform? Like, what is its function? Go ahead and start, Corey.
Well, historically, obviously these are enacted in every convention. Supposedly, this is for the world to see what the party stands for. Historically, these are not binding documents. It's not like the European system where the party will come up with a platform and then recruit its candidates. In fact, the platform was primarily written by Romney and his supporters. Although, as I said, you can see areas where the other candidates' supporters had some voice. But largely, these are designed to say to the public what the party thinks, but they're not binding. And so, on the one hand, they're really significant because it turns out studies show about 70% of what a party says in its platform it will, in fact, try to do and while in office. On the other hand, these aren't binding, and it's very easy for someone to say, hey, as the Speaker of the House did yesterday, nobody even ever reads this thing. So how important could it possibly be?
And Jeffrey Cabaservice, you are the author of The Rise and Ruin, about the Republican Party. Let's talk a little bit about what's in the platform and kind of how that's evolved. Abortion is one of these controversial subjects, both within the public and apparently there within some of the delegates. It first appears in the Republican Party platform in 1976. And now this year it says that they oppose abortion in all cases, including incest and rape.
Yeah, I think the Republican Party platform, or any party's platform, is not a binding document, but it is a fairly significant indication of where the party is and what it stands for. And I think what you can trace in looking at the Republican Party platforms from the 1970s through today is a party that's becoming increasingly conservative on fiscal and social issues. And this is, in a sense, the culmination of a process that's been going on for the last 30 or 40 years.
And Rick Holbrook, you're a delegate, and you've said you don't really care what's in the platform.
Yeah, certainly I'm aware of it, but I think when it comes to electing a candidate, the key issues that certainly I'm focused on, and I think most delegates are focused on, relate more to the economy, deficit spending, and those kinds of issues. Something like the abortion issue, I think it's important to consider that, but that is much less important to me than the big issues as I'm thinking of them.
And so let's talk about what are in some of those big issues, like you say, the economy. So, for example, let's get you into this, Corey. It says no new taxes except for war. What else is in there about the economy?
Well, the tax section is a little bit difficult to read, frankly, and I guess I violated the speaker's edict and read the thing last night. And there's been pieces in here. It talks about making permanent the quote unquote Bush tax cuts. It includes eliminating taxes on capital gains, which is something that former Governor Romney was opposed to in the primary campaign. It talks about abolishing the inheritance tax. It actually says that we should cut taxes by 20% across the board in a revenue neutral way, which I imagine certainly I would be in favor of if we could figure out a way of cutting taxes 20% in a revenue-neutral way. that sounds like a good idea. And then it says there'll be spending cuts and doesn't specify what the spending cuts would be, but that they would, you know, any need to offset would be offset with spending cuts. So it's hard to imagine exactly, at least through the lens of the platform, how this actually has anything to do with fiscal matters. Certainly, you could argue these are ways of trying to stimulate the economy, but in the same breath, it's saying it's, you know, trying to balance the budget. And frankly, there's no math in here. As you may imagine, it's not intended to be that kind of document, but there's no math in here that explains how this is going to add up.
Well, how about for you, Rick? What does the party stand for you? And when you hear what's in the platform, how does that change the way that you look at your party?
I really almost more resonate. I mean, I look at the platform. I haven't actually, they handed it out to us yesterday, but we were there so late last night, I haven't even had a chance to read it yet, but I'm going to plan to read it this week. But as I've listened to the things that Mitt Romney has talked about over the last several months, and of course now we've got Paul Ryan on the ticket, it's the issues that they're talking about that I think I'm listening to the most, and of course that's what most Americans will be listening to.
And Jeffrey, you've said that the Republican Party has essentially lost its moderates, and that began not with the Tea Party, but at the end of the Eisenhower presidency, which is 1961. Can you give us just a short history of how this party has evolved?
Well, it's been moving to the right, but not in a continuous way. It's been sort of in fits and starts. Of course, it moved very far to the right at the 1964 convention that nominated Barry Goldwater. And the platform that was produced at that convention was a far more conservative document than any that had been produced for the previous three decades. But after Goldwater lost disastrously when the American people rejected his brand of conservatism, the party actually moved back toward the center. And as various people have pointed out, if you were to look at some of the documents of the Republican Party platforms from the Nixon era, they're actually calling attention to the party's progressivism in certain areas, to its good record on civil rights and environmental issues, and things of the sort that have really disappeared from the party platforms in more recent years. Of course, the party begins to move further to the right with the victory of Ronald Reagan in the 1980 Republican contest. But even then, Reagan was not anywhere near as conservative, for example, on issues of abortion, and nor was the party platform of the 1980s as conservative on issues of abortion as it is nowadays. I think essentially what you have is a party establishment that's no longer able to resist the movement to the right from the grassroots activists, and the party platform this year is a reflection of that fact.
And that's Jeffrey Cabaservis. He's the author of Rule and Ruin, The Downfall of Moderation and the Destruction of the Republican Party from Eisenhower to the Tea Party. And we're talking about the evolution of the Republican Party and the party platform at the national convention happening in Tampa right now. We're joined by Rick Holbrook, who is a delegate for the 2012 Republican National Convention, and Corey Cook, who's an associate professor in political science at the University of San Francisco. He's joining us, and he has read through the entire platform, and he's there. And thank you for doing that, Corey. Let me invite our listeners to join our conversation. We're at 1-866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also send us email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you identify as Republican, how much do you know about the party's platform, and how much do you care? Does it influence your party affiliation or your vote in any way? 1-866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. And if you're somebody who's been watching politics, how have you seen the Republican Party change since 2008 or 1980 or 1960? Sorry, I forget my digits mixed up there. 1980 or 1960, for example. And if you don't identify as a Republican, what do you want to know about the pieces of the puzzle that make up the GOP? A recent Pew poll said that 52% of Americans were interested in knowing what was in the Republican Party platform. Give us a call and join our conversation by calling 866-798-8255. And if you saw the speeches last night, what did you think of what Am Romney or Chris Christie had to say? 866-798-8255. And let's go to Alex in San Francisco. Welcome to your call.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering, how is it that there is so much to do about Republicans trying to replace President Obama when only 3 years ago, the Republican Party and their president nearly drowned the American economy, and Obama had to come as a lifeguard to put the American economy back afloat, and hardly did he start working on it, than when they want to come back, as if they have a long-kept secret to get us out of the misery they put us in. How does American people, how is it that we forget so? Well, I cannot believe it. I can't believe this hunger for Republican program.
So you, let me see if I'm understanding so I can help frame this question for our guest. You're saying you don't understand the anger in the Republican Party at the economic state because you feel like the collapse happened in 2008 under the Bush presidency?
They are the ones that destroyed the American economy.
Okay, so let me put that. Go ahead and stay with us, Alex. Let me put that first to Rick. I mean, you said the economy is what really matters to you. Alex is saying, you know, and in a lot of ways, the country is in this mess because of the collapse and because of the fiscal policies, frankly, of the Bush administration, both the wars and the tax policy. What's your response, Rick?
Well, I'd say certainly the biggest problem, of course, was the collapse of the banking system that we had back in 2008. Oddly enough, a lot of those problems, of course, came from the housing situation and the problems we had with Fannie Mae. We can actually thank Barney Frank for a lot of the housing policies that allowed Fannie Mae to make the kinds of loans that ultimately led to trouble. But I think the biggest problem we've had in the last 3 years is that the economy has not rebounded the way that it normally has after a recession. And a lot of that has been because of the kinds of rules and regulations that have been imposed by the Obama administration. And that's certainly what the Republicans are hoping to reduce is the amount of rules and regulations that seem to be impeding the recovery in the U.S. economy.
Like Dodd-Frank, I think that that's one of the things that it calls for the repeal of. Corey, why don't we pull you into this in terms of how the Republicans are talking about and looking at the state of the economy in historical context?
Well, I mean, to back up a little bit, I think part of the response too is the one that Paul Ryan's given, which is that you know, he's more or less apologized and said there's a great piece in the New Yorker, a profile of him prior to when he was chosen as the nominee for vice presidency, where he says in essence, you know, that some of the things that he voted for in Congress during the Bush administration he was ashamed to vote for, and that he basically said as a fiscal conservative, you know, this is an opportunity to come sort of to do it right. It actually blamed a lot of the flaws we have currently on some of the votes in the Bush administration. And he didn't cite the tax decreases certainly, but he did cite you know, the prescription drug plan. He did cite you know, some of the other expansions in government spending, as well as the two wars, as things that he might have done differently. So I think obviously it's a Republican convention. Republicans are going to make the case that this is all President Obama's fault, and a week from now, President Obama is going to make the case that he inherited it all, and if we give him 4 years, he'll sort it out. And that's sort of the nature of the beast. But there is some recognition within the Republican Party that some of what was going on, you know, some of the reception was in fact under their watch, at least.
And Jeffrey, can you just give us a little bit of a historical sense of how fiscal policy has evolved over the years within the Republican Party?
Well, fiscal policy has been the common ground between the conservative and moderate wings of the Republican Party over time. Chris Christie's speech last night actually was, in a way, a classic moderate Republican speech. It's not at all incompatible with being a strong, committed partisan. Now, of course, you don't look for committed ideological partisans to be objective historians. So, of course, we're hearing about how this is all of Obama's making. But the fact is the Tea Party is also, in many ways, a rebellion against the big government conservatism of George W. Bush, which I think is part of the reason why you're not seeing George W. Bush at this convention, let alone his father. And I think, you know, the interesting thing to see going forward is whether a future Republican Congress or presidency would actually implement any of the things that are being called for in the Republican platform right now, because they are quite extreme in terms of a lot of the documents that have come before this time.
Well, that's a big question. How much does the platform influence sort of current policy, and who is setting the agenda right now for the Republican Party? Is it members of Congress? Is it Tea Party influences? Is it Romney and Ryan? Who's really setting the agenda for the Republican Party right now?
In my opinion, it's probably not Mitt Romney himself. It seems to me, and of course I'm happy to be corrected by people who've been on the scene, that Romney has taken a largely hands-off approach to the platform committee's work. It seems largely to have been in the hands of the co-chairman, Bob McDonnell, and Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. and of course the 100-plus RNC delegates who've been there. But my sense is that if a presidential nominee really objects to something that's in the platform, he can expend his political capital to alter it. And you certainly saw an example of that in 1960, when Richard Nixon spent a lot of his political capital to make sure that the Republican Party platform had a civil rights plank that was just as aggressive, in fact, if not more aggressive, than the Democrats. And I think you also saw, in the case of Ronald Reagan's nomination in 1980, he was someone who was so secure in his conservatism and had no need, in a sense, to establish his bona fides to the conservative grassroots, that he had some influence over making the party document rather moderate. I don't think Mitt Romney is exercising that kind of influence or even trying right now.
And I saw something really interesting, speaking of Christie's speech last night, that mentioned factory workers and teachers a lot. And the 1960 Republican plank called for government workers to receive, quote, salaries which are comparable to those offered private employees, I think it means. In 1984, public sector workers are then redubbed bureaucrats and Washington government elite and are blamed for an epidemic of crime, a massive increase in dependency, and the slumming of our cities. So what's in the plank right now for about workers and labor and worker rights? Corey?
Worker rights, there's certainly a call to support the governors across the country who are changing the pension reform systems. But in terms of labor rights beyond that, there's not much. I mean, that's essentially the call, and this is what I think the two biggest applauses I heard yesterday was one, when the governor of Wisconsin just said his name on the floor of the convention and the place went berserk. And the second was, with Governor Christie talking about, rolling back pension benefits. And so I think that is really what was being talked about in terms of particularly public employees unions. I thought one of the more powerful lines last night was that Republicans support teachers, Democrats support teacher unions. I mean, that's obviously the argument that's being made.
And Rick, what are you hearing about workers, worker rights, the rhetoric around what are we going to do for teachers and truckers?
Well, I think, a lot of the issues have to do now with a recognition that in some cases the unions really have become too powerful, and I'll relate back to that line as well about the teachers' union versus the teachers. Scott Walker, of course, has made himself a hero by trying to take on the unions in Wisconsin and allowing more right-to-work type attitudes. And I think that type of thinking is really becoming very popular in the party, where people are realizing we need to streamline our rights. Nikki Haley, who's the governor of South Carolina, talked about how Boeing tried to set up a plant in South Carolina, but it was going to be a non-union workers situation. The government, the Obama administration, sued South Carolina and Boeing for that. They fought back, and they ultimately did get the Boeing plant there. But we're seeing a real move to try and stand up for just the rights of companies and to try and weaken labor unions, which have been hurting companies from expanding in the past.
And that's Rick Holbrook. He's a Bay Area delegate to the Republican National Convention in Tampa. We're also joined by Corey Cook, who's a political scientist at USF in here locally, and Jeffrey Caba Service, who's the author of Rule and Ruin, about the Republican Party's evolution. We're talking about the Republican National Convention, which is underway in Tampa, Florida, and the nuts and bolts of the Republican Party and its platform. And if you want to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. Have you seen the Republican Party change since 2008, 1980, 1960? And if you don't identify as a Republican yourself, what do you want to know about the pieces of the puzzle that make up the GOP? 866-798-8255. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
Public Radio KALW San Francisco. Back to your call in just a moment. Our fall membership campaign begins on Thursday, September the 6th. We're promising to keep the programming uninterrupted the way you like it, and you can help make this drive as short as possible by making a contribution at KALW.org today. Every contribution that comes in now will count towards the $325,000 goal. And when we reach that number, we'll wrap up the pledge drive. Join listeners like Judith Dean in Menlo Park and Francis Wilson in Berkeley, who have already made their pledge to local public radio. And maybe we can end the drive a little early. Again, kalw.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about voting rights. Are voter ID laws taking effect in several states threatening our democracy or strengthening it? Friday, of course, is our media roundtable where we talk with journalists about the week's news. And today, as the Republican National Convention is underway in Tampa, Florida, we're talking about the Republican Party and its platform. Who is setting that agenda? Who does it represent? And who are the movers and shakers in the party? What does it mean to be a Republican today? If you want to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-798-8255. That's a toll-free number, 866-798-TALK. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you identify as a Republican, we'd really like to hear from you. How much do you know about the party's platform, and how much do you care? 1-866-798-8255. And let's go to our callers right now. Let's go to Harry in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Call, Harry.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to say that over the decades, the Democrats have moved ideologically to the right of Richard Nixon and now embrace neoliberal theology. They practice it quite extensively. With regard to the convention, a lot of attention has been focused on people like Ann Romney, but when you listen to Jan Brewer, Rick Santorum, and Scott Walker, it comes across that this party is blatantly racist, blatantly patriarchal, blatantly anti-immigrant, and in my opinion should be named the Beam Me Up Scotty Party. If these people ever get elected, you know, what damage they're going to do? And they've moved this far to the right since the 1960s. You know, what are they going to be like 20 years from now? It's just incredible. And there's just no acknowledgement of reality on the ground that there are differences of opinion that are legitimate, or that there are other ways of life. Tolerance is something these people just don't simply understand. I'd like any opinions from Republicans on that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Harry. And just to let everybody know, we'll be talking about the Democratic Party platform next Wednesday on this show. So we'll be drilling down into that. So Harry would like a response from all of you. Who would like to start?
I couldn't actually hear Harry well enough. Could you just summarize his points, Holly?
He was saying that essentially the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have really moved to the right, and he was talking about fiscal policy in particular, saying that neoliberal economics was a basis of the Democratic Party now, too. But he said that the Republican Party has moved so far to the right that there's an intolerance there, and that they're sort of an anti-women, patriarchal, and racist party, if I'm summing it up, I think, correctly. So go ahead and tell me who's speaking, because it's a little hard to sort the three of you out. Go ahead. Is it Rick?
So this is Rick. So I would say that certainly, and one of the things you had mentioned earlier, Holly, was the change from 2008 to now, 2012. Certainly the rise of the Tea Party has pushed the party in a much more conservative direction when it comes to fiscal policy. They have moved so far to the right that there's a lot of Republicans, I consider myself more moderate than that, that don't actually agree with a lot of the things that the Tea Party would say. But nonetheless, the general thrust of trying to rein in the deficits, lower taxes and so forth, is something I think that most Republicans do agree with.
And Jeff, did you want to get in on this?
Well, I wouldn't endorse everything that the caller said. I think in some ways the Democratic Party has moved to the left over time. For example, there used to be Republican mayors of San Francisco, whereas that doesn't so much happen anymore. But I would agree that the trend has been toward the right. I remember interviewing Elliot Richardson, who'd been a cabinet member in five different positions under Republican administrations going all the way back to Dwight Eisenhower. And I was talking with him about Bill Clinton, and he said, you know, what people don't realize is that Richard Nixon was to the left of Bill Clinton. In some ways, Dwight Eisenhower was to the left of Bill Clinton. There really has been a shift in the American political landscape toward the right over time, which is a measure of the success of the conservative movement and the Republican Party generally.
And so do you think that that's what accounts for it, is that the Republican Party has been successful in mainstreaming their ideas?
I think the conservative movement has had a lot of traction with segments of the population they didn't have traction with in the past, particularly the white working class. And there are a lot of reasons why that is so. I think the Republican Party in the past was much more interested than it is now in appealing to African Americans, Hispanics, other minorities. I think part of what you're seeing in the platform and in the convention generally is that the Republican Party, at least for the time being, isn't pursuing that aggressively, although it's true that there will be Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and some other Hispanic speakers, and that Arthur Davis also spoke to the convention as well. But in terms of policies that are put forward, in terms of actual programs codified in the platform that would explicitly be for the benefit of minority communities, you just aren't seeing that so much.
And Rick, Jeff has said, who wanted to get in? Go ahead.
This is Corey. If I could say two things. One is, I mean, the platform, to me, the significance is as a political document, not as a you know, policy document. I mean, this tells you about where the Republicans are going to be running the election. And I expect actually a far more liberal Democratic platform this year than there was 4 years ago as well. This is a different type of election. So it's very clear. What normally happens in a convention like this is you have, you know, more focus on folks like Chris Christie talking about how to, you know, build partisan bridges and work collectively. What you're seeing this election is both parties are going to beat the heck out of each other. I mean, this is an appeal to your base election, not a move to the middle election. And as a result, I think both party platforms are likely to speak to the extremes of the party more than you would otherwise expect. I mean, it starts off the platform with the usual, you know, platitudes about, you know, the American people having the vast reserves of courage and determination and give sacrificially of their time and all the stuff you get in the normal platform, and then it turns into you know, English only. English is the official language. It gets into locking down borders. It gets into you know, voter ID laws and the importance of voter ID laws because of the real problems of voter fraud around the country. And it most expressly talks about this, and it mentions this in the platform, this line that I think has been thoroughly discredited, this sort of dog whistle about welfare reform, that Obama has tried to repeal the work requirements, which there's nobody in the world who, with any sort of objectivity, who would tell you that the that Obama has actually moved an inch on eliminating work requirements on welfare. But this has been used as a way of sort of trying to mobilize, in particular, white working class voters. And so you see that in the platform. That to me, again, makes sense politically given this election, but it's not, I wouldn't necessarily read that as actually, you know, President Romney would do anything different than President Obama would on welfare reform.
And what Harry brought up immigration as well. The platform talks about essentially replicating Arizona-style immigration laws. Can you just give us a little bit of information, Corey, on what it says about immigration?
Well, that's basically it. It says it would stop the federal lawsuits against the states that are trying to clamp down on immigration. It talks about, as I said, English is an official language. I think, you know, this is particularly problematic for Republicans from California. This is one of the reasons I think the Republicans, you know, for the first time, essentially since you know, I think three generations, lost control of the Assembly, Senate, and all statewide elective offices. It's because of the inability to appeal to Latino voters in particular. So I think probably a lot of California Republicans who would look at that part of the platform and say, you know, this isn't us. This isn't the way we need to talk about these issues. This certainly isn't the way we're going to win elections in California. But again, this is a way of appealing to the heartland, as the immigration issue remains very powerful within the Republican Party.
And that's Corey Cook. He's an associate professor in political science at the University of San Francisco. He's at the Republican Convention in Tampa. We're also joined by Rick Holbrook, who's principal for Holbrook Global Strategies, and he's a delegate to the Republican National Convention, also joining us from Tampa. Also on the line, we have Jeffrey Cabaservis, who's author of Rule and Ruin, about the evolution of the Republican Party, which is what we're talking about today on Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and the number to join us is 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. What are you making of the coverage of the Republican Convention? 866-798-8255. A recent Pew study said that 52% of Americans were very interested in knowing about the Republican platform. Does that represent you? 866-798-8255. And have you seen the Republican Party change over the years? If you have, what have you observed? Our number again is 866-798-8255. And now let me go to some of our callers. First, let me read an email from Maureen. She says, the pro-life issue is repeatedly invoked as an extreme position in the Republican platform, but I don't think it represents the majority of Republican voters, many of whom are pro-choice to some degree or another, especially women. I believe this stance is in the platform to appease the Christian Christian right, without whom the party believes they cannot win. This is a matter of pragmatism, not ideology. So, callers, just give me one more second to get a response to that. What do you think, Jeff, Corey, Rick?
This is Jeff. Let me just jump in on that. I think the pragmatic thing to do would actually be to allow some leeway for disagreement on this issue. I think since most Americans do have such divided opinions on this matter, including a lot of Republicans, that the pragmatic stance would actually be to say, you know, we are a big tent party. This essentially was the message of Lee Atwater, the Republican strategist, in his sort of dying testament to the party. I think the fact is that since the party depends so much more on the grassroots now and has so little capability to restrain the grassroots, they have to appease them by throwing in these rather extreme Todd Akin-like statements that are just blanket condemnations of abortion. We haven't seen anything like this in past Republican platforms.
Interesting. Rick, just because Maureen said she thinks that most Republican voters, the majority, don't believe in such a radical stance on abortion, and you, I believe, said that you didn't either.
Yeah, that's true. I think that most Republicans I talk to would not be as extreme as the party platform. What do we do about that? I don't actually believe that the principles that principle in the platform would ever get implemented anyway. As Jeff said, I think it's there to appease the extremists, but in practicality, I never would expect that to be implemented by the Republicans in any case.
And yet we've had all of these proposals around states in the U.S. Radically restricting health care and reproductive rights of women. So some of these things may not be being implemented at the federal level, but they're certainly being implemented statewide.
Yeah, we are seeing different states talk about that, and as you said, different states have tried to implement something at least similar to that. The very conservative states in the South in particular, we're seeing some of that.
Let's go to more callers. Let's go to Stuart in San Francisco. Welcome to your call. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I just would suggest that everyone read the lead editorial in the New York Times today, which points out that just about everything that was said at the Republican platform at the convention last night was baloney, misleading, or totally a lie. For example, John Kasich of Ohio boasted a lot about how his state is recovering. And never mentioned that both he and Romney opposed the auto bailout, which is responsible for his state's recovery. So it's just all a bunch of baloney, that's it. That's what I got to say.
Well, we'll put a link. Thank you for that, Stuart. We'll put a link to that editorial along with all kinds of other resources at yourcallradio.org. Can I get a little bit of response? We can start with you, Rick, to the idea that a lot of falsehoods seem to be put out there.
Well, there's certainly a lot of fact-checking that goes on, which I think is, in general, has had the positive effect of getting people to be a little bit more careful about their statements, and so I view that as a good thing. But we clearly need to continue to hold our people, on all parties and everything they say, we need to hold them accountable to try and be factual in what they tell the American people.
And let me hear from you, Jeff, and you, Corey. I don't know if it's because I haven't been around long enough to have been watching conventions and politics for long enough to know. The New York Times article says, following in the footsteps of Mitt Romney's campaign, rarely have so many convention speeches been based on such shaky foundations. And it does seem to me as an observer that I see a lot of misinformation put out there as fact. Is that just a perception, or is that actually growing because there's so many more avenues for communication? Go ahead and start, Jeff.
Well, I mean, there is a long tradition of political falsehood on the part of all parties in this country. So I am unable to say whether the current Republican Party is more or less factual than past incarnations. But what I think I can say is that the current Republican Party would love to get away from the legacy of the last time that Republicans were in power, which is to say the George W. Bush years. Which was the time when you had TARP legislation passed, when you had the auto bailout passed, when you had the enormous deficits rung up from the Bush tax cuts and from two wars. And therefore, I think it's kind of in the Republican Party's strategy or propaganda approach, if you will, that they're going to pretend that those years almost didn't happen and that every bad thing they can think of that's happened with the American economy and the global situation has happened only in the last 4 years on Obama's watch.
I actually want to talk about climate change and what's in the platform about that. But let's first go to Tamba in Alameda. Welcome to your call.
Yeah.
Hi. Am I pronouncing your name correctly, Tamba?
Yeah, it's Tamba. You're right.
Okay, yeah. Welcome to your call.
Yeah. As I just said, I don't know the difference between Obama and Mitt Romney, the Republican Party. They voted for everything Obama passed. Now they try to blame him alone. So I don't even know. Obama passed Obamacare. Romney passed Romneycare. But now he's running away from it. What's the main difference they have?
What's the main difference?
Obama don't have.
Okay, let's get that. Why don't we go to you, Corey? What are the main differences in policy and in how they would actually govern between these two men, President Obama and former Governor Romney?
Well, I mean, we could start at the beginning. I mean, certainly fiscal policy is different. Their investment strategy in terms of infrastructure is different. I think, you know, certainly talking about differences on social policies. I mean, you mentioned climate change, for example. The Republican Party convention has two references to climate change, and I can read part of the section because this is what I find fascinating. It's being critical of Obama's foreign policy strategy, and says the strategy subordinates our national security interests to environmental, energy, and international health issues, and elevates climate change to the level of a severe threat equivalent to foreign aggression. That's it for climate change, and the entire Republican platform is a reference to that Obama. Considers that the equivalent of Al-Qaeda. So certainly we could expect some differences on environmental issues and regulatory policy. I think that's undoubtable. If I could briefly talk about the previous caller's question.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, and having gone to this 4 years ago, obviously the goal of both parties is to find the small things that their opponents can say and blow them out of proportion and try to demonize their opponents. And that happens at every convention. I guess I was astonished, to be frank, and trying to be objective about this, the degree to which the entirety of yesterday was built on this sort of, as the New York Times called it, this thin reed, that when Obama was saying, you didn't build the bridges, that he was really saying you didn't build business. And I think it's a kind of bizarre reading that he would actually have made the argument that the builders of business didn't build their own businesses. But in any case, have speaker after speaker after speaker focusing on a theme that, again, I think, you know, it's kind of bizarre, and then have Chris Christie then follow up by saying that actually the biggest problem with Obama is his lack of leadership and that he follows the polls too much. You spent the whole day saying that this guy opposes free enterprise and capitalism, and then close with saying, and actually he just follows the polls the whole time. The problem is, again, is if the Democrats, and they may very well do this a week from now, and I'll be the first to complain about it if they do an entire day on how Mitt Romney likes to fire people. I mean, it's the equivalent of taking something entirely out of context and building a party platform around it is, you know, it's grasping at straws. And given the mood of the country and how close the race is, you'd think the Republicans have so much other material and so much other things they could be talking about to focus on an out-of-context quote for an entire day of the convention strikes me as just a bizarre strategy.
Rick? Do you want to respond to that, or we can move
sorry,
on?
Rick.
Well, the other thing that I saw, that was Corey Cook. He's an associate professor in political science. But one of the things that I saw happen last night was also a focus on women. I think that there was a line in Governor Christie's speech that said, Obama wants to put a bureaucrat between you and a woman and her doctor, something along those lines. And there was a lot that was directed at women, particularly Ann Romney's speech. And we haven't heard from many women, so I'd like to actually put a call out right now. We'd like to hear from women. What are you thinking about this party platform that has women's reproductive health as such a central part of its platform, as such a big part of its platform, and certainly a big part of what they're talking about this election cycle? Give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you saw the speeches last night, what resonated for you? 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. You can also email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're talking about the Republican Party, its evolution, and its platform, what the specifics are of what's in it, and what that would actually mean for governance in the future. 866-798-8255. I'm Holly Kern, and this is Your Call, and I'm specifically asking to hear from women out there. What do you think of the Republican Party platform? What is it, if you're a Republican voter, what is it that resonates for you and makes you want to be part of this party? 866-798-8255. And let's go to Roger in San Francisco. Hi, Roger. Welcome to Your Call.
Hi, Well, I'm not a woman, but I have a certain perspective on what's happening with the Republican Party. The prime movers in the Republican Party, as I see it, is Grover Norquist and the Tea Party. You know, I was sitting here thinking of something positive about the Republican Party. Now, I'm 73. I've seen a lot of elections in this period of time. But the only thing I can come up with positive about the Republican Party is Abraham Lincoln. He put an end to slavery in the South. But it seems like they wouldn't... nothing good has come out of them since then. What is wrong with this nation when we have a party that advocates positions that they do? It's what they do to women, what they do to the poor, what they do to the unions. I mean, it's just incredibly, it's hard to understand how people think that way. And it's, yeah, I think it's very sad. We're very fortunate that we have our president. He's a good man in my thinking. But if we saddle him with another Republican Congress and, God forbid, another Republican Senate, this poor man is going to be trapped.
And Roger, do you have any specific questions for Rick, who is a moderate Republican? He's a delegate at the convention right now. Is there anything specific and kind of brief that you'd like to ask of him?
Well, Rick, if you are a moderate Republican, I applaud you. I know you're up against a lot. How can you expand your thinking in the party? How can you appeal to a Republicans that can think like that, have a moderate position? If you go into Washington and you tell them you can't vote for any tax increase, where are they going to get their money? They're going to have to take it from Social Security or Medicare or other social programs that help the poor.
Roger, let's put that to Rick. Rick, can you respond to Roger, please?
Sure. I think that we all agree that we want to take care of the poor, that we need to save Medicare, that we want to save Social Security and so forth. And I think the issues come down to how are we going to do that? Are we going to do that by trying to streamline government, figure out ways to make cuts where needed? Clearly there's a very strong anti-tax increase movement in the Republican Party right now. So, but nonetheless, we as a party are very committed to trying to reduce the deficits, try to save Medicare and Social Security over the longer term. And I think where the party disagree is how to do that. But the commitment to make these viable programs for the future is very strong in the party as well.
You mentioned Medicare, and in the platform and in Paul Ryan's proposals on Medicare, it moves from an entitlement system to a voucher program. Corey, can you tell us a little more about what the Republican Party is saying about Medicare?
There's not much more than that, actually. But essentially, that's exactly right, that it would achieve some savings in Medicare through competition, essentially, that it would create vouchers and that would exert a downward pressure on health care costs through competition. And that's essentially the line.
And we're running out of time here, so let me get Gina from Oakland on. Gina, if you could be somewhat brief so that we can get a response. Thank you for calling in. I wanted to hear from a woman.
I'll try 2 points here about the help that I receive from the government, Medicare, and I have been on disability for a long time. Through no fault of my own, I have to be on it. So without those 2 checks every month, I'd be a goner. Now, a voucher system doesn't work for me because I can't afford a voucher system. The other point is I'm tired of men trying to control women's bodies. We have our own bodies. And if you're going to base that on a document that was written millions, thousands of years ago, that is only partly inspired by Jesus or God or whatever, and a lot of it was written by insecure male minds who want to keep females in their place. And, you know, we're going to rise up and be powerful. I'm sorry. I don't want to be kept in place by any males. That's what I want to say.
Thank you so much, Gina. And we only have 2 minutes left, so I want to get a brief response from the panel, particularly about this issue of women. And I got an email from another woman. I'm a woman and a Democratic voter, and I believe women's reproductive health should be discussed by doctors and women only. This is not part of her email, but that was what was so interesting about Christie's speech last night to me. Not by politicians who are obviously unprepared to discuss the topic. I am enraged that politicians want to control women's bodies. I see it as a form of oppression. So if we could get a quick response and final thoughts from each of you about sort of the evolution of the Republican Party and how women, what the policy toward women is under Republicans. Go ahead and start, Rick.
Yeah, I think that there's actually quite a bit of disagreement within the party in terms of how to handle issues such as abortion, which we've already talked about. There's a lot of people, such as myself, that'd be much more moderate and essentially agree with the sentiments expressed by the email and also by the lady from Oakland. But clearly there's other elements that are trying to be much farther to the right, and I think that's an issue that we continue to battle about.
Thanks, Rick. And let's get like 30 seconds from each of you. Thanks. Go ahead, Corey.
So the platform states that Obamacare promotes the notion of abortion as health care, which I think is, somewhat egregious. I don't disagree at all with what Rick has said about the party on that. The other thing I want to mention quickly, since I did read the platform, I feel like I have an obligation to mention this. Particularly Bay Area Republicans would be appalled. The platform states that it has a long opposition to smart growth as social engineering. So one of the pillars, I think, of Bay Area business ideas associated with smart growth is directly undercut in the platform, which I find fascinating.
And Jeffrey, I'm so sorry that we don't have more time with you. We'll invite you back to hear more about the history of the Republican Party. Jeffrey Cabaservis is author of Rule and Ruin, The Downfall of Moderation and the Destruction of the Republican Party. We also were joined by Corey Cook from USF and Rick Holbrook, who's a delegate with the RNC. I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. What's the status of voting rights in the U.S.? On the Next Year Call, we'll talk about the sudden proliferation of voter ID laws. Before 2006, no state had voter identification laws. But since 2011, 176 restrictive voting bills have been proposed in 41 states. So what will this mean for November's election? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Are voter ID laws threatening our democracy, or are they preventing voter fraud? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also friend us on Facebook. Ali Budner and Malihe Razazan produce the show. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.